Hey, everybody, on this episode of the Designated Survivor After Show, Tom Kirkman gets a little bit closer to the truth, and we have the man possibly behind the evil plot, at least one that's being framed for it, Majid Nassar, in studio. That's right, Nick Massu is right here talking to us all about Designated Survivor and his career next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
There you go. Look at that.
Woo!
Michael Klaus just scrubbing that iPhone, man.
Yeah, I'm scrubbing. I'm putting out an Instagram story.
Millennials.
Trying to vlog all this social media stuff that we now have to do, which is great.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Designated Survivor After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We're breaking down, of course, Episode 9, The Blueprint from Season 1. A lot of cool things happening in this episode. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
What's up, guys? I'm your host, Christine Alexis. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Christine Beam.
What's up, everyone? How are we doing this evening? You can find me on Instagram at the only MC, even to see that story that I just tweeted or posted. All the social medias run together. Twitter, though, at Michael Klaus TV.
Hey, guys, I'm Renee Ariel. You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel. And check out my blog, catslipstickla.com. I just put up a new article, How to Get Over Someone in 15 Easy Steps.
And folks, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Michael's got his iPad up there ready and running. He's got the chat running. So if you want to comment about the series in general or this episode in particular, hop on, share your thoughts. But ladies and gentlemen, let's introduce the man who's sharing the hour with us here. You may know him for such things as Documentary Now, Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, Ray Donovan. But he's, for Designated Survivor, plays the most wanted, the most feared man in America, is responsible, supposedly, for bombing the Capitol building, Majid Nassar. That is right. Ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause for Nick Massu.
Welcome to AfterBuzz.
Awesome. Glad to be here.
This is going
to
be like your confirmation hearing right now. We're going to be attacking you.
Well, look, let me tell you.
At the end, we all, as well as the people in the live chat, are going to vote, and you'll have to decide your fate.
That's right. If you're going to be the next vice president of the United States.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm not really dead. When they flew me away in that helicopter, it was to get some. I don't even know what I'm. What it was.
You're good.
I'm trying to think of something here that's going to be funny and interesting. No, they flew me to the White House. I'm staying in the East Wing.
Oh, yeah. The Lincoln bedroom.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, thoughts on the show. You know, obviously, to have a character on the show, you're wondering what your actual thoughts are. I'm sure you're watching it like everyone else every week. What are your thoughts on the show, thoughts on your character, and how it's being portrayed?
Well, what I love is that they say my character name more often than I think I actually had screen time. It feels like every other line is Majid Nassar. Majid Nassar.
Fun name.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
It's a great name. No, I love the show. I think each week it gets a little more interesting. Catalan is just a mystery, but we're learning who this guy is. I got to say, that was one of my favorite moments, was when I got to say Catalan. Because they put the pressure on me. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes,
you do.
And then suddenly, I just had to go, Catalan.
Were you wondering how to pronounce it? Catalan? Did you really have to get a pronunciation description?
Yeah, the pronunciation plus with the accent, which turned it into Catalan.
Catalan.
That's fine.
So when you get this role, how much of it is just the way you decided to portray it from the script, or did you do any kind of research in kind of, you know, well-known terrorists and stuff?
Google terrorists.
Yes.
Well, I got to tell you, when you look like I do in Hollywood, this isn't my first terrorist rodeo. I've gone down that road before, so I know a lot about. I've learned how to play these types of roles. No, really, ultimately, doing this type of stuff for me is about trying to find a some sort of emotional truth within the bad guy and not just be a bad guy, because that's what I think is going to separate you from somebody else getting the role. They want a little more emotional depth. The scene that they first had me audition was the interrogation scene. But it was written differently, and it was at the time, to me, it felt a lot more complex. Like, there was a little more motivation as to why he did what he did. You know, you hear the story of his wife and kids who got blown up, and so I played that truth a lot more, and I showed that vulnerability in the character. And I don't, you know, I don't know if that's what got me the role or not.
Didn't hurt.
Didn't, right? I got it. And then when I'm on set, it was a lot more of like, just meaner. Can you just be a little meaner? I wouldn't want to see that vulnerable side. Just mean. This guy's tough. So it's just interesting how it goes from audition to when you finally film it.
What was it like working on set? Obviously, you know, a lot of big names in this, but it seemed like your scenes weren't necessarily with them. I mean, were you on set with Jack Bauer? Yeah, you said everyone.
No, but, you know, I never got to meet Kiefer. Mm-hmm. All my scenes were with Maggie and mm-hmm. I can't remember mm-hmm. the other gentleman's name, but Jason Atwood. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but working with them was fantastic. They're complete pros. They nail it every time, and it was, you know, really cool experience working with them. But
awesome.
But they split up the filming of it. They have two teams of two film crews. So I never was on the film crew that was shooting Kiefer.
Okay. And you said it was filming up in Toronto, which for your last scene where you have water being splashed on you, it was a couple weeks ago in winter, and you're getting water splashed on you in Toronto.
It was cold.
Yeah.
And I was on a metal slab in my skibbies. And I was literally shivering. You can't tell on camera, but I was shaking. And the director came over and goes, "Oh, that was great. That was great." I was like, "Well, I was shivering. Did you see any of that?" And he's like, "No, no, it's great. It's great, great. Keep it up." I was like, okay.
It is one thing to watch back how they cut that scene and realize, man, I was there on that slab for so long. And that's, we get that one little shot of them like zipping me up and pouring some water. That's it?
That was it? That's it.
How long were you on that slab?
I think about an hour, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Clip that was 5 seconds.
Yeah, they had a huge crane. I mean, this was in a big open airplane hangar, mm-hmm. and they had a huge crane. So it happened so fast, but some of the coolness of the shots are like this crane swoops in, and then it comes above, and they, you know, film all up and down me. But then they chop it up and they give you 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the secret to playing a dead body? At some point when you're doing a big sweeping crane shot like that, do they say, like, somebody's screaming as the camera gets closer, "All right, next, stop breathing."
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that it?
Yep, hold your breath. Here we go. But for this big shot, apparently it wasn't that intense. Like, they couldn't – I don't think they could tell because I was doing a lot of shallow breaths. But for the other – my other dead episode, that was a lot more tight on me, and that was a lot harder while I had like foam dripping out of my face, mm-hmm. and they're popping those big flash bulbs, and I'm supposed to not flinch or not breathe.
Not blink.
Sounds difficult.
Not blink. Yeah. They wanted to try one with my eyes open on the dead. It's hard to not blink.
Oh man, but you. I mean, it seems certainly this episode. Obviously, your character's dead as of last episode, but you're still very much talked about, it seemed. Yep. Surprised by that? Are you wondering how much you'll be incorporated as far as like your namesake in the future episodes?
I feel like they're not going to stop using my name.
It's so fun! Majid Nassar.
Majid Nassar.
It rolls off the tongue so nicely.
I mean, gosh, like even those early episodes that I was in, that wasn't in much of the episode, but they talked about me the whole time. So it's this really weird feeling that you feel like, oh, this is a really big role. It's a very central character to the storyline, but you don't actually get to sit with me too much. It's a little disappointing. I would like a little more time.
Now, for a show that has a lot of conspiracy behind it, and especially with this plot about how Majid Nassar is taking credit for this, for you, I mean, I'm sure the producers are still trying to figure out their arcs and whatever. Do they tell you any tidbits?
Nothing.
Or no? For any choices that you make are just based on what you think his reasons were for being forced to take the bill or take credit for this.
Yeah. It's really fascinating because they don't even let the series regulars know ahead of what the next episode is. Hmm. You know, the a lot of the makeup department, the hair department, they get the scripts ahead of time. So you can sneak a peek at the upcoming script if they
leave it out.
They leave it out for you, you know. But, they don't. They want to make sure that you don't know anything. And then the other kind of trippy part is they have a different director per episode. Mm. So the first time I did the episode where I'm doing the tape where I claim responsibility for the bombing of the Capitol building, that director, I was like, well, what is it, you know, what kind of, what do you think about the character? I could really do it very intense and mean, or I could do have a little more vulnerability to it. And he's like, try it a few different ways. I mean, this is my last episode, so I don't know where the character's going. But do it a couple different ways, and we'll figure it out.
So, wow. Okay.
So, interesting. They choose it. You know, and then there's a producer, you know, they're consistent, and they're keeping an eye on things, and they're very hands-on. But yeah, it's kind of an evolving process.
The show is very serious, and everything that they're showing is that it's serious and on the edge of your seat and thriller. Was it serious on the set filming? I mean, is that something that they try to put in the atmosphere that will reflect in the show?
I mean, there's definitely a high level of professionalism on the set, but everybody is incredibly nice and wonderful and very warm and very accommodating. And once it comes time to do the work, it's quiet. You know, and they really take care of the actors and give them the space to do the work. But at the same time, it's, you know, they do create a very comfortable atmosphere where people can joke, have fun, hang out. Hmm. This is a funny experience. When I filmed the interrogation scene, it was usually what they do is they cover the main actors before they do the guest actors.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because they don't want them to ever rush for time at the end for the main actors, but the guest actors, it's fine. We can rush them. So anyways, it's like 3 in the morning. We've been filming all day. Everybody wants to go home, and they finally turn the camera around for my close-up. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we find out that there's a guest coming to set to hang out and watch. And next thing I know, Lenny Kravitz walks in.
What?
And they put... Lenny Kravitz is a good friend of Maggie Q's, and he was in town on tour.
Really?
And he wanted to stop by and say hello. And suddenly he, and I love Lenny Kravitz. I am a big Lenny Kravitz fan ever since I was a little kid. And next thing I know, there he is sitting in Video Village watching my close-up.
A little extra pressure.
It was a little extra pressure.
Did you get a picture?
No, I didn't want to be that guy.
Didn't want to, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to be
totally understandable.
But Maggie introduced us, mm-hmm. and say hi.
That's cool. But awesome. weird encounters you think you're going to have at 3 a.m. in Toronto. Like, oh, I'm just going to meet Lenny Kravitz. Yeah. That's normal, right?
Yeah, sure. He's literally was my childhood idol. I mean, I wanted to be Lenny. I loved his early albums. I wanted the dreadlocks, the piercings. Lenny to me epitomizes cool.
He sure does.
I saw him one day pumping gas, and he was wearing a fringe jacket and moccasins, and he made it look so good.
Doesn't matter. He can pull off anything.
Yeah.
Do you hold your cool while you're talking to him, or do you kind of geek out a little bit?
I geeked a little bit, you know. I had to tell him how much, because I never spoke to him at the gas station. I regretted it, and now here I had an opportunity, so I had to tell him, "Hey, I love your work, and from the beginning, from Let Love Rule on, I'm a big fan." And he was nice, and he said, "Hey, I love your work too. I've been watching it on the screen." So,
awesome. Nice. It has to be, you know, mean a lot to that he actually is a fan of the show and watches and obviously knows who you are and your character in the show. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
Well, a lot to break down. Thoughts on this episode in general? I loved it. Did you guys feel the same way? We actually had some stuff happen. I'm so excited. Stuff was revealed.
As always with the show about conspiracies, it's always like 2 steps forward, 3 steps back, sort of, where things are kind of revealed, but then they always stop at that crucial moment, which I guess we'll get into a little bit. There's Tom Kirkman and some of his choices that he decides to make. Like, he decides, like, hey, well, we'll get into that. I don't want to spoil that. But we start off the episode, of course, in the NSA. We see Gabriel Thompson doing a nice little, like, his little Mission Impossible moment. Downloading some data, you know, taking out the little hard drive, putting in a quarter, taking off and escaping the NSA. There were a lot of details that he's going to
do. Did you think he was going to be good or bad throughout the episode? They paint him right away as stealing information. Did you think he was going to be good or bad?
Yeah, tough to say. I don't know. It's always he didn't seem very malicious in the stuff. Especially when Aaron and everybody in the Oval Office are saying, well, none of it's really no big consequence or blowback on us, all the information that he's releasing. So at least initially it didn't seem like he's a major threat. You, Michael, you seem to...
I would say I didn't think he was going to be bad. I thought he was going to be good. Just the way he seemed really clean cut, his calm demeanor. He's a little heavier, so he's lovable. I mean,
okay.
Let's be honest. You know, the look of him is certainly not someone who you're like, oh, kind of sketchy. Like, what's his name who runs WikiLeaks? He looks like he could be a sketchy dude. It's tall.
Julian Assange.
Yeah, I mean, the look of him is like, oh, yeah, I could see you being a bad guy. This guy, he looked like, well, I mean, he's an uncle. So, I didn't see to the point, though, which I loved, at the end when Kirkman said, you know, I did some digging and found out that the stepdaughter mm-hmm. died. Like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Which I actually really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ladies?
I enjoyed that moment, too. I felt like it just filled in a little of the blanks with us. Mm-hmm. Like, Kirkman's always mm-hmm. trying to play catch-up, and why did this person do this, and what's mm-hmm. the motives? He actually did a little digging first before entering that conversation, and I think that put him in a good spot not to be manipulated or, you know, lied to, so...
Yeah,
that was good.
When we were originally introduced to him, or really just saw him, I was thinking, well, it's just going to be a bigger story. I didn't even think, the importance was on, whether he'd be good or bad. I just knew it was going to be a bigger story mm-hmm. that was going to have some kind of twist, because it is a pattern in the show. So my focus wasn't even, is he good, is he bad? I was just like, where are they going with this? That was my original thought when I saw it.
Well, my thing that was irritating at the end is where he basically the whole gist of this is that he's released this information to try to get 5 minutes with the president. That's his deal. So Aaron sets it up for him, and he goes to the White House, putting handcuffs right away, and goes to meet mm-hmm. Kirkman. And then all of a sudden, one of the Secret Service guys leads in and goes, oh, transport's here. And they just take him away, yes. You are the president. If you don't want this guy to go, he's not going to go anywhere. You can just sit here and keep this conversation going on for a while.
Yeah, and you go through the middleman of him saying, oh, it's this letter number, look up this specific thing on this disc. Well, why don't you just tell me what's on there? Why are you being let out? Tell me. Don't have your secret. As you pointed out, hey, I appreciate it. Let's give it to the Secret Service agent. Like, he knows what to do.
Well, apparently he did. He's got 12 years of IT.
Yes.
Who knew?
He gives good parenting advice, too, to Leo. He's just a jack of all trades.
Yeah, that's right.
He's amazing. And apparently Kirkman didn't know, but knew. Like, he knew to give it to him, but didn't know he had 12 years of IT service.
That's right.
Oh, wait. I was smart giving you this change. You know.
Surprise.
But you have to think he's going to get pardoned.
Well,
whether they actually show it or not.
Yeah, maybe somewhere
down
the
line. He did something good.
Yeah, it was one of those that maybe by the end of his term. He's whenever it's like, oh, yeah, I'll throw those last little pardons in at the end. Well, especially
I doubt they'll even show it again or bring it up again this season. I don't think so.
No.
But is that actor a recognizable actor, though?
The guy?
He looks...
He's a good supporting character guy mm-hmm. That I've seen him around before, but I can't...
I feel like I've seen him before.
Mm-hmm. I
think he was in The Killing. He may have been in The Killing.
The Killing. I don't remember him in it, though.
Well, it could be The Killing. It could be a Canadian actor. Well, no, Killing was shot in Seattle, wasn't it? Not Vancouver.
Yeah.
No, it was shot in Vancouver.
Ooh, Vancouver.
Vancouver. But it was took place in Seattle. Anyways, mm-hmm. That's a good... Canadian actors kind of run the gambit in all the shows that are filmed in Canada. You start to see them doing on different shows, which is
that's true, eh?
Now we do find out that I think the biggest piece of the information. Thank you,
yes.
Michael. That's right.
Good joke, Michael.
That the information, especially the file that Thompson didn't want Kirkman to be sharing with anybody that he didn't trust, was that there was they war gamed out the detonation of the mm-hmm. Capitol building back in 2013,
which is not a bad thing. I mean, you're staying one step ahead. I hope people are not looking at that and be like,
no.
How could our government do that and plan this out? Well, you have to be prepared.
Yeah, I think it's just a question of leaking that out to
yes,
somebody.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the
thing. Mm-hmm. But that, I just, so many parts about this episode, I mean, from all of that of actually, you know, getting somewhere with Thompson, in this show, we're just so used to the fact that they bring up information and don't finish it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And... it's so frustrating, and I'm so I wasn't frustrated this episode.
It was satisfying to see it come full circle.
In multiple ways. I'm giddy.
Yeah,
everyone can tell.
Was.
Someone commented that I'm like someone said a happy something on here. They're like, Klaus is a happy bunny tonight. And I'm excited. For the first time in a while at this show, well done.
Well, I feel like this whole season we've been building up to try to get Maggie Q and Kiefer Sutherland in the same room together.
Yes.
And I'm hoping by the winter finale we can actually see them at least maybe meet cute in the Oval Office for a second.
She's going to show up bloody in the hospital.
Oh, no, wait. She doesn't even need to go to the hospital. She was running around in those promos. Yeah.
Look, she's Maggie Q, all
she's
right?
She's going to find a way to make it happen.
Wasn't she La Femme Nikita? She's pretty tough.
Oh, man. That's another big storyline.
Let's talk about the cool crime-fighting duo, Chuck and Hannah. Look at them, man. Kicking butt. Chuck's stepping up this episode.
He's like a James Bond Q.
Yes. I like Chuck's character.
I like him.
He's great.
He's fun. He's very likable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he... And of course, then we also have Reed Diamond. He's from the Office of Professional Responsibility. And anytime Reed Diamond shows up, I'm always expecting him to be the bad guy.
He's always... He has that look.
He's just always like... He looks nice, but he's always like... He's just like all business. He's willing to do what it takes. So I was waiting for this episode for him to do his little evil turn. It didn't happen, though. So perhaps this is the one, series Reed Diamond is not the bad guy.
He... Yeah, and excuse me. Sorry, it's 11:38.
Oh,
Michael.
Sure, Michael. That's how you really feel.
I was up at 7 a.m. today. We're still rolling along. No, they paint him maybe initially as a bad guy, but then come full circle if he went to in the same school as Atwood and seems to have that working relationship with Hannah from a previous gig that she was on, a job. And so I think he's going to be good.
I think he's just doing his job. I mean, I feel like anybody that works like in an internal affairs capacity is always kind of looked down upon by the people that are actually out there, like, you know, walking the streets and doing the real work. And they're always like, oh, well, you guys are always, you're trying to bust us when we're trying to stop the bad guys.
He's a man of principle.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Principle. But he had an opportunity to not sell out his buddy, and he didn't take it. When he was asked, you know him, is he the kind of guy who would do this? He's like, well, yeah.
Way to step up for your boy. That's right.
I've seen a lot of things. I'm a little surprised. I would say the thing that surprised me a little about the show is Kirkman is how he feels about certain characters is not maybe how I would think. His feelings on McLeish, his feelings on Atwood, his feelings on someone else, I forget, where he has like judgment calls on people. And that is something that I think they're trying to stress in this show is his personal view of things. And not always looking at the evidence, but looking at the people. And I think that's something that he does, and it's shown in that scene where he just doesn't... He wants to believe that Atwood is a good person.
Yeah.
Like himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely see that a lot.
Well, he does have that cut where he's talking to his wife and he says, why are so many people that are wanting to do this public service and serve their country faithfully all of a sudden they're turning crazy?
Yeah.
What's going on with all these people? And there's a fly in the studio. Look at that. Renee's enraptured by this fly.
Saw a flash of light.
So Hannah's investigation with Chuck is also kind of intercut with McLeish's confirmation hearing as well. So the whole idea is trying to figure out what the 1114 was that she was told about last episode.
Which they threw in right at the beginning of, hey, by the way, he was already confirmed by the Senate. And I actually paused it and said, did we miss something that it was a jump right away?
Well, I think it might have been that Congress is being confirmed. You know, like they've been trying to get Congress going again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but that's when I first heard confirmation, that's where my brain went.
Well, it was Senate, though, because the one senator who they brought in said that I rushed McLeish through for you.
Yeah, so I think they rushed the confirmation hearing.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a lock, but they rushed that confirmation hearing.
Okay.
He was, because you have to be approved by both. And obviously they just wanted to focus on the House and Hook Stratton. But I was surprised that it happened that soon. And still that... Hannah has not said anything. I mean, that's been another frustrating...
Look, she doesn't know who she can trust.
That's true.
It's a real catch-22.
McLeish just gets to, like, say whatever he wants and whisper in Kirkman's ear.
I know.
It's just ridiculous.
He's like, I think Hannah's obsessed with me.
Oh, my God.
Like, if she says anything, like, conspiracy theory is crazy. Like, he's getting that to...
I think Kirkman knows what's up, though.
Oh, yeah. Just from the look in his face. He was staring at his hands when he was going like this and answering the questions.
And even when he kept saying more and when he's like, okay, I'll look into it. Like, I just felt from the way he was acting out that scene, like, he's not an idiot. He has
fingers
to know
crossed.
That there's something behind that. Whether or not he knows McLeish is full-on, you know, evil or involved, he knows that he's being dishonest at the very least.
I hope so. It really did seem that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're past the point now of just, oh, maybe that's a coincidence. Like, there's something going on.
Ivan says that Kirkman is looking dumb to not be suspicious of them.
As in McLeish?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Hopefully this winter finale will start raising Kirkman's suspicions towards people.
I want him to be more suspicious, but like inwardly suspicious, because I feel like sometimes he doesn't gauge the right moments when to let on how much he knows and maybe to when to put on a poker face. I think in this situation, he needs to be delicate about handling McLeish and revealing what he knows.
Like the Jason thing, when Jason wasn't delicate about it. I really, he has to know. Tactful. Because if someone comes up to you and they're like, man, you know, wow, that guy, he's like obsessed with me. If he says anything about like me cheating, like he's crazy. That's like the same vibe. You wouldn't be like, man, that other person must be crazy. You're like, what's up with this other person? So you'd hope in this situation it would be the same thing.
His theory of trusting people is good and bad. Yeah, obviously, it's good for Atwood, I would say, but it's bad for McLeish. You see the best in people, and you want to believe the best. And I think that's also interesting of, you know, it going both ways is something that I noticed this episode of Hook Stratton. It's good and bad that she hates both McLeish and Kirkman. That she doesn't, she hates everyone in power.
Yeah, because that they're given into it without earning it.
Yeah, but it's good and it's bad because, like, her hate for both of them is good that she hates McLeish.
Yeah, but she also hates Kirkman.
But you hate Kirkman and you need to work with Kirkman. So it's a good, it's like a divisive.
Like, she's just pushing everyone away that's in her path, I think.
I think it's a selfish thing.
I feel like she's a bit of a flip-flopper. I don't know, because if you guys track back, didn't she, some of the episodes, she was like, all right, I'm cool with you. And the next episode, she's like, nah.
She's playing the game.
Yeah.
She's definitely,
she knows how to play the game, for sure. She's
definitely playing the game.
Wait till, she's always telling, wait till re-election. Then I'm coming. Then I'm running.
She really stressed that at the beginning of the episode in the background on the TV, too, of saying, I'm the highest elected official.
Yeah. She's just trying to rain on Kirkman's parade, unfortunately.
Yep. As many of them
throw
do.
That in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think as we knew, as soon as Hannah said, like, oh, I've got that information, and I'll tell you as soon as I see you, like, we know she's not getting there. Not this episode, at least.
No.
Oh, well. Goodbye. Goodbye, Maggie Q. At least for right now.
She's not gone.
She's not. Well, who knows?
Do you think she'll be back next episode or after the winter finale?
No, she's back next episode.
Oh, we saw it. Yeah, you didn't see it. She's running around with blood.
She's a survivor.
They'll probably end right when she's able to say something. And then
she'll be like, Kirkman!
Boom!
Yeah.
My question is what took Catalan so long? I mean, it was two episodes that he saw her with Jason Atwood.
That's true.
With the sniper. And he's just letting her run around? I mean, if he's so badass, I mean... You know.
And how is she not more suspicious? I thought that when she was like getting into her car a couple times of like, you're not like checking to see if there's a bomb on your car.
She met with her like connect in the coffee shop. Like she's just running around making moves, like not looking over her shoulder. Like they could easily manipulate her and do the same thing they did to Atwood.
Yeah.
And she just.
Well, no, because her man's dead.
Yeah. She doesn't think to lose anymore. Ooh. Yeah. Damn. Well, she's still acting reckless.
Yeah, she's definitely acting reckless. I agree with that. She needs to check over her shoulder, make sure everything's good, so she doesn't get into a car accident.
Or at least
save the day
when you're turning right, like you know,
right, girl,
or wherever she was turning.
Back to driving school. Go drive safe on the road.
One last thing we'll talk about for this episode, though, a little love blossoming finally in the West Wing.
Oh yeah.
We see Emily and Aaron finally starting to make steps towards a little smoochy smooch, as we'll see as we were teased for next episode.
Mm-hmm.
About time, guys? Are you like, all right, finally, let's do this?
Yeah, but I wish it wasn't dinner. Like, I wanted to be like,
How did that go?
Something to like.
I didn't want it to be a classy dinner. I just wanted it to be. What was that?
Just take me on your desk right now. Is that what you wanted, Renee?
That's what you wanted.
That's what I wanted. But they're like, no, let's get dinner. And then it's like,
ABC,
next episode.
This is a family programming.
Anyways, no one else agrees. No one else wants
Let's
that.
Let's ask the live chat.
I'm with you. If you're going to have an unethical, inappropriate office romance,
go away. Thank you. Right? I've had sexual tension for so long, we're going to get, want to get dinner? No, where's the kiss? Where's the, like, something, ABC.
Slap on the butt, maybe something.
It might have been too dramatic for them.
On the butt.
Just all right, like all right, now get out of here. I'll see you later.
We'll talk about those things later.
I am for or against the relationship?
I have really no horse in this race. It's like
that's not an for or against.
I really I don't care.
What would be the reason to be against? I really don't.
Okay, yeah. For or against?
Four.
I mean, I think they're just doing it because they need a romantic.
They need a stress reliever.
Yeah, look, I like the characters. I like the actors. If it's going to add an extra little color to the show, I'm for it.
I was initially against. Now I'm for, because they didn't just do the thing right away of like four. Because here's the thing: if you're gonna do the wham bam thank you ma'am, that I think you should have had like
the
four.
Wham bam thank you.
You've never
ma'am.
Heard of that. Never?
No, people say that.
Come on. Someone else has heard wham, bam, thank
Do you.
Do
you say that in your daily life?
In 1989.
Thank you.
I got your back, Michael.
But no, I think before I was against it because it was like she was getting out of something. It wasn't the right timing. But I've grown to like the characters, as you said. And I think the whole situation of him standing up for her, and I, very classy. And so I approve. I am happy with that.
Oh, all right.
People on the live chat.
There you go. Best names
people on the live
producers.
Chat, for or against?
That's Michael Kloss's giving his seal of approval.
And
on
did
that
you want the, what was it, wham, bam,
the truth,
thank you, ma'am?
The
or
truth
dinner?
Is not a fan. The truth has spoken, and he says, I don't like Aaron and Emily together. It seems forced.
I mean, yeah, we haven't seen, I don't think we've seen enough. Like tension between them. Like, there have been times. Like, yeah, he remembered her coffee order, but like a lot of people remember my coffee order.
What is it? What's your coffee order? What's your go-to?
I get a venti iced hazelnut coffee with extra brave.
Look at that accent.
With extra what?
Extra brave.
What is
that?
Half and half.
Brave.
Brave.
Why don't you just say half and half?
Because at Starbucks they write the B, so I make it easier for them. Shout out to my people at Starbucks. I love them.
Yes. Shout out to us at Starbucks.
Brave. All right.
It's the best.
Is
try it?
Ivan is four, though. Ivan is four. And Ariadne says that she's 24 and has heard of that saying long ago. Thank you, Ariadne. Well done. You're my new favorite.
You only like them because they like mega stuffed Oreos.
Yeah. Oh, wait. By the way, regular Oreos or double stuffed or mega stuffed?
Well, I don't think I've ever seen a mega stuff.
Good. You're not missing out.
It seems intense. I think.
But?
I think I'm a classic Oreo guy.
Yes!
Dog!
Yes! I want to take Michael's seat on this show.
Oh!
Boot. You're done. Bye.
Somehow this discussion came up and put out a Twitter poll. I lost.
I won.
Yeah.
So, Michael.
And then
me
I subsequently
OG
came
Oreos.
In with a pack of mega stuffed Oreos and put five of them together. So it was just cookie, like an inch and a half of cream.
We don't need to relive this moment.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good.
Christine's face was my favorite. Please, everyone listening or watching, go back and watch Christine's reaction to Michael eating those Oreos. They're my favorite.
As we're looking back in the past, why don't we turn to Nick and his past? Nick, you grew up in El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start acting? Was it in El Paso or did you go elsewhere?
No, yeah, I was in El Paso. I started acting in high school and just fell in love with it. And then when I found out that you could actually have a career as an actor and go to college for acting, I was sold.
And where did you go to school?
University of Southern California.
Oh, okay, nice.
Right down, yeah.
So now, El Paso, we were talking a little bit before the show. You're just kind of saying it's a very small, kind of quiet town, not much there.
Well, I mean, yes and no. It feels like a small town, but it's actually...
It's big with a small town feel.
Yeah, exactly. It's about 1 million people now, I think. Especially when you add its sister city, Juarez, it's pushing 2 million probably at this point. But it's like segregated and... Not segregated, but it's... You got the west side, the east side, and north and central. And each one of those feels like a small town. So it's like four small towns within a large town. Anyways, feels very homey. It's very nice.
So when you start acting there in El Paso, did you kind of have an idea of like, I know exactly what I want to do. I want to go to USC? Or is El Paso such a place where you're like, I don't know, where do I go? What's my next step out of here to continue pursuing this?
Well, I mean, I had no idea as an 18-year-old kid what you do, or where you go for acting or whatnot. So I did my research, and I'm more of a theater person, and I wanted to do theater, so I was all about the East Coast. And then I got this booklet in the mail from USC. That's how unaware I was. I didn't even know about USC. I mean, it's like an amazing school. It's got a big history, but I didn't even know who it was who they were. And I looked them up, and they had a program like I was looking for. And they were auditioning in Chicago, where all these other schools were auditioning, where I was going to. So I thought, well, I'll go.
Yeah,
I'll audition for them too.
Add them to the list.
Yeah, why not? And I auditioned, and I got accepted, and I thought, well, maybe I should go and visit. So I came and visited, and it came down to USC or Emerson in Boston. Mm-hmm. I just was sold on the weather. And
no arguments there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good weather.
And I got here, and I was still a theater kid, and you know, everybody out here wants to do film and television, and I almost left for a while. I almost went to a different school, and then I started to become sold on film and television, and now I do both. Fortunately, I get to keep theater in my life, even nice. In Los Angeles.
Because yeah. certainly, when you think about like here or New York, I think a lot of people don't realize just there is a big theater community here in Los Angeles, but it doesn't get the attention that it does in New York.
Yeah. It's actually that there's more theaters in Los Angeles than I think any other city in the world. They just happen to be small, mm-hmm. you know, theaters that maybe don't have as high quality of productions as you're going to get in New York or Chicago or some of these other places. But yes, there's a ton of theater here. But it's difficult. It can be real hit or miss, you know, when you go out there. But the big theaters are all fantastic. I have my own theater company, and we do our own work, and it's very fulfilling, and so I do theater on a regular basis.
What type of projects do you like to work on?
For theater. Well, what I actually do something that's really unique. I'm part of a company. We do completely improvised plays. Mm. So we do a full-length play that's 100% improvised in different styles. So we'll do things like Tennessee Williams or Shakespeare or Chekhov. Dickens, Jane Austen's one of our big ones. Last night I did Twilight Zone was a genre we did. So we do a lot of different genres, and we have a show next week. I'll do a little plug here.
Yeah, do it
for any LA people who want to go see this. This is in the style of a 1960s television Christmas special, a la Andy Williams or Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. It's done at the. We're gonna do it at the Broad Theater in Santa Monica.
Nice.
Next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or is it Friday, Saturday, Sunday? I don't know. I think it's Thursday. You should know this. I think
it's at least Friday, Saturday.
Yes, it's at least Friday, Saturday at the Broad. If you've never been to the Broad Theater, it's a 500 seat theater. It's gorgeous, and it's a really fun show. A lot of improvised songs and improvised dances, and a lot of Christmas holiday cheer.
So. Now, how long have you been working on that before you decided, like, all right, we're ready to put it up and have an audience watch?
Well, we came up with a concept earlier this year when the Broad asked us to do a Christmas or holiday show, I should say. So we kind of had the concept, but we've been molding it for about 3 months now. And we're actually still... We're about a week away. We're still fine-tuning. But it's the beauty of improv. At the end of the day, we're just making it up. So, you know, if everything's not tied up in a bow, at the end of the day, we hit the stage, and we're going to make it up anyway. So,
what made you decide you wanted to embrace more of an improvised style of performing as opposed to just doing plays, traditional plays?
Well, I kind of fell into it backward. I did improv in college. I do a ton of comedy, which is kind of ironic most of my television roles are very dramatic and serious. I did improv and sketch in college, and when I got out of school, I wanted to do more improv. And instead of going to like a Second City, or at the time there was no UCB.
Groundlings.
Instead of going to those places, one of my teachers of improv was improvised Shakespeare. And I went to go see it, and it was a full-length Shakespeare play with 16 actors completely improvising, and I was just blown away. And
wow.
I was like, that's what I want to do. So I started studying and taking classes, and the company reformed in 2006, and they invited me to join. And we created the first fully improvised repertoire theater company. So we've just been creating and generating styles over the years and developing it. And I have the fortune of working with some of the best improvisers in the world.
16 people improvising. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
I mean, a lot of improv shows that I go to, it's like four people, five people, six people.
Yeah.
16.
16, yeah.
Like, that's a lot of knowing when to talk, knowing, you know, what your character is and how it incorporates into the broad picture.
Yep.
The energy must be crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's intense. Now, I will say, most of our shows, we do a cast of, like, 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare where we do a full show of 16, but next week it will be a full 16 cast.
Wow. That's really exciting. Awesome.
And we just did a show at the Ford, a full 16-person cast, the Ford Amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
We did a noir with a full jazz band, and it was pretty amazing. And so, yeah, for me, I love theater and I loved improv, and there they were, and it was just like a gift. And I call it the best theater gig in town because I can do theater all the time, but I don't have to be slave to rehearsals and showtimes. When you do theater, your life is theater.
Yes,
for the run of it.
It's a dedication.
You have to show up. But in improv, it's like sports, next man up. If you can't show up, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's improv. Somebody else can do it. So we all get to put our TV and film careers first if they come up, and still have to do theater all the time. Yeah.
Very nice. Cool. Awesome. So now your family's left El Paso. They're up in the Michigan, Ohio area.
Mm-hmm.
Good area.
Yeah. Michigan, we got a viewer. Right outside Detroit right now. Yeah. That's where I was born.
So now, were you a big Trojans fan or no? You're like, nah, I got to stay like Ohio State. I got to stay with Michigan.
Or growing up,
I was a Michigan fan. I was a Blue fan. But my dad's an Ohio State guy.
Ooh.
So that was heavy. I didn't really know about the Trojans, but now I'm a Trojan. And I realized, that the history between Ohio State and USC is really big. I'm no longer a Michigan fan. I don't like John Harbaugh. but that goes back to my Pete Carroll days.
Mm-hmm.
But then all my brothers went to UT Austin. And I don't know if you've paid attention, but over the past decade or so, Ohio State, UT Austin, and USC have had some really amazing games.
Is this a bad time for me to mention that I'm a Wisconsin Badger?
No,
considering the USC Badger game last year.
Go Badgers.
Oh, did we lose to you last year?
Yeah, you lost. Yeah. But it's all right. It wasn't that big of a bowl game.
Yeah, I'm a kind of...
Both teams are doing well this year, and we're not playing one another in postseason.
Yeah,
so.
I'm a fair-weather Trojan fan. I stopped watching after Pete Carroll left, and we went into suspension.
So you're a Seahawks fan, then, and you follow Carroll?
Oh, I love
because he's Pete. Killing it up there.
But now USC's doing good again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started watching.
They're number 9, number 9 in the country. I forget what bowl game they're playing in, but it's a big one.
Yeah, 9. It's great. I mean, after starting off, 1-3.
Yeah,
it's a shame because I actually think we're now good enough to play some of these better teams.
And so you didn't embrace that Lane Kiffin era?
Oh.
No,
I don't think anybody embraced that era.
They're thinking. You know, one of the things my dad said to me when I was trying to decide between Emerson and USC, he sat me down and he said, you know, it's your choice, Nick, but USC has a football team, and that's something you can take with you the rest of your life. Okay, thanks, Dad. Glad you got your priorities straight.
That's funny.
So, Nick, if they want to follow your what you're doing, what you have going on, what's the best place for them to find you in the internet?
Well, I guess probably just you could my name on Facebook. You know, I don't post a lot other than what I'm up to. So if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, Facebook's a good place. Or Instagram. I don't post as often as I should, but I will try to do more. but it's Massou, but instead of Massouh, I spell it Massioux. Like the Sioux Indians, I believe the Native Americans speak deeply within my heart. So hopefully it's not cultural appropriation, and no one gets mad at me for it. But I believe in the spirituality of our wonderful Native peoples. So.
Well, who knew that Majid Nassar would be such a quality, classy guy?
That's right.
Who cares about the earth and cares about the world? I never would have known that.
Who knows?
That's right.
Here I am blowing up Capitol buildings. But no, I care about people.
Look at that. A soft, tender side to Majid Nassar.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up one more time for Nick Massou for joining us today. Yes. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Designated. Oh, thanks, James, in the booth for that extra
Very
applause.
Nice, James.
That's going to do it for us on this episode of The Designated Survivor After Show. But we'll be back next week with the winter finale, guys.
Woo!
The winter finale. Who knows what we're going to get? Revelations will happen. How much in the know Tom Kirkman will get? We'll find out next week. But if you want to continue the conversation with us, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thanks so much, everybody, for hopping in the chat, sharing your thoughts about the show. And if you want to continue with us even after the show's over, Renee, where can they find you?
Hey, guys, you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at Renee Ariel, and check out my blog, catslipstickla.com, and read How to Get Over Someone in 15 Easy Steps.
I'm just going to make a joke about that, but I can't think of anything right at the top of my head. Maybe I'll tweet out something later. If you want, nice. You can follow that on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV, on Instagram at TheOnlyMC.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Christine Beam.
And you follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. Thanks so much, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next week for the winter finale of Designated Survivor right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Adios.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.